Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with your hosts, Drs. Anish Chagpar, Susan Higgins, and Stephen Gore. Dr. Chagpar is Associate Professor of Surgical Oncology and Director of the Breast Center at Smilo Cancer Hospital. Dr. Higgins is Professor of Therapeutic Radiology and of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Sciences. And Dr. Gore is Director of Hematological Malignancies at Smilo and an expert on myelodysplastic syndromes. Yale Cancer Center Answers features weekly conversations about the research, diagnosis, and treatment of cancer. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can submit questions and comments to canceranswers@yale.edu, or you can leave a voicemail message at 888-234-4YCC. This week, you'll hear a conversation about culture and spiritually sensitive palliative care of Muslims. Here's this week's guest host, Mark Lazenby.
First, Dr. Al-Shahri, tell us what palliative care is like at the King Faisal Specialist Hospital in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
Well, we started our palliative care program in the early 90s. It was started as a home-based home health care program, delivering palliative care to patients in their homes. This is how it began. And then the service developed into a full service with a tertiary inpatient unit in the hospital with a consultation team providing hospital-wide consultations with coverage 24/7 for the emergency room and for the home healthcare patients as well. And we have now eight-bedded, single-bedded tertiary unit, and we have clinics, outpatient clinics as well. So this is how it is right now.
What are some of the services you provide as a palliative care service to patients?
We care for patients. We recommend as early as possible referral to the service, but we also focus on patients in their towards their end of life. I mean, their the end of life issues and the special needs during this critical period of their life.
Ghassan Aboudari, you're a clinical nurse coordinator in palliative care at King Faisal in Saudi Arabia. What is the role of a clinical nurse coordinator in palliative care?
Of course, the role of a clinical nurse coordinator in Saudi Arabia may be a little bit different than what you have in the United States. Here we have more advanced practitioner nurses, of course. They have more responsibilities. In Saudi Arabia, my role is liaison between physicians and nurse, patients. Try to be like, as I mentioned, liaison between the medical team and the multidisciplinary team, like the social worker, the physical therapist. And we try to work together to provide the best care for our patients, especially in these critical moments in their lives. And we try to relieve suffering and maintain comfort for them. So it's more about liaison. It's a partnership with the multidisciplinary team and try to give the best effort for to have the direct the efforts of our team to the best care for the patients. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Omar Shamia, you're Chief of Palliative Care at the King Hussein Cancer Center in Amman, Jordan. What is palliative care at the King Hussein Cancer Center like, and who's on your team?
Thank you, Mark, for this invitation. As you know, King Hussein Cancer Center is the largest cancer center in the country. It's a tertiary cancer center treating about 50% of cancer patients in the country. And we have the largest comprehensive palliative care program. We have four services. We have a standalone unit, eight-bedded unit, in the hospital. We have an inpatient consultation team, and we have inpatient admission and referral team. We have an outpatient clinics, and we have a home care program. The home care program, we have two teams covering the capital city, Amman, and another team was covering outside Amman. We see about 10 to 12 patients per day in a given day, and they do also weekends. We have many services we provide. The main thing we do is a pain and symptom management. And preparing patients throughout the trajectory of the illness. We offer psychosocial support, we offer spiritual support, and we do end-of-life care, as mentioned by other colleagues in our center. Our team consists of physicians. We have 3.5 full-time employee physicians. We have 3 inpatient nurse coordinators. We have 2 clinical pharmacists, 1 social worker, and 1 spiritual advisor. And we have on-demand physical therapist and clinical psychologist. We have 4 home care nurses, and the hospital is building a new expansion across the street, which can house additional 200 beds in addition to the 177 current beds. And we have a standalone, a huge outpatient center, accommodates 4 times the capacity of our current outpatient clinic. And of course, with the expansion, our palliative care service will probably expand 2 to 3 times the current capacity.
Yeah. So you 3 have been here at Yale over the last few days talking about palliative care and Islam. What are some of the principles of palliative care that fit well with Islamic teaching and belief, Dr. Mohammed Al-Shahri?
Well, I think it's a complete fit between the two, Islamic faith and principles of palliative care. First, the holistic nature of the two. So Islam is a way of belief and also a way of life, and it encompasses all the activities and behaviors of the Muslim. And we know that palliative care is also a very comprehensive type of health care that encompasses all the facets of suffering the patients are going through, be it the psychological, the social, the spiritual, or the physical aspects of suffering. So they both fit very well from this point of view. Second, the affirmation of life. And this is one of the principles in palliative care. Palliative care affirms life, and this is a very important concept in Islam as well. The next point is relief of suffering. So, and relief of suffering is a very righteous thing in Islam, and it is, of course, the theme of palliative care.
Yeah. Dr. Omar Shamia at the King Hussein Cancer Center, what are some of the methods you use to relieve physical pain and suffering?
Of course, you know, part of suffering of cancer is having severe kind of pain, which can happen from the beginning of the diagnosis and throughout the disease journey. Patients can present with different types. We call it either neuropathic or can be either through the viscera or a limb pain or somatic pain, we call it. And we have many effective medications for this, wide variety of medications. But the main medication to treat cancer pain is opioids. And we have different kind of opioids, and we use them in the right dosage and the right in the right patient. And they are very, very effective in relieving most of the pain the patient has.
What's the view of morphine and other opioid medications in the Middle East, particularly, Dr. Omar?
Use of opioids and opioids actually pose a challenge in the Middle East and all over the world with the fear of addiction, fear of misuse and unlawful use of the medication. However, with constant education to the providers and with putting down strict policies and procedures in order for the medication to be used safely for the right patient at the right time at the right setting, I think that helps. And with making the medication available for those patients, that play a major role in relieving of their, of course, suffering and physical pain and other symptoms.
Dr. Mohammed, one of the founders of our field, Dame Cecily Saunders, who founded St. Christopher's Hospice in London, talked about pain as having multi-dimensions, not just physical, but it could also be psychological, social, and spiritual. How do you treat the spiritual pain that patients may feel or the spiritual distress they may feel with cancer or at the end of life?
As you rightly mentioned, the suffering of these patients is complex and is multifaceted. Presenting that way, the approach to it should be also approached by a team rather than by a person or one discipline. So you need a team to approach such a complex problem that is, you know, a lot of factors are involved. The physical factor is obvious. Cancer is there, and it's causing destruction of the tissues and, you know, change physically. But also the other factors are very important, the spiritual, the psychological, and the social factors. And it has been observed that these interact with each other in a synergistic way. So the whole is more than the sum of these facets of suffering. So that leads to what is called total pain. So the approach of these patients should be a total approach of care that involves the spiritual care providers, involves the physicians, nurses, other colleagues from physiotherapy, dietitians, and so on, to tackle the problem from all angles, you know.
Yeah. Ghassan Aboudari, you've talked about over the last few days the importance of family. And what's the role of family in helping patients through this period of pain and suffering that may come with advanced cancer at the end of life?
Of course, one of the principles of end-of-life care is that patients and their families is the unit of care and palliative care, the unit of care, of course. And actually, terminal illness is a family experience because, you know, family... they suffer psychologically because of the patient's condition deterioration. The family, they have influence, maybe because of lack of education, and this is something global issue. They don't get enough information about opioid management, so they show some reluctance of using these opioids. So I think from our part as health care providers, we need to explain to the family the benefit of providing these opioids and not to fear of addiction or side effects for them, so we can overcome this barrier of the global barrier of fear of opioids, which is mainly related to lack of education. Spiritually, I think for the pain, you know, it's as I mentioned by Dr. Muhammad, it's multifactorial. You know, they need more for teamwork of multidisciplinary team. Like you need a spiritual caregiver, you know, like a spiritual trained provider, you know, for the family and for the patients to guide them for the better care for their patients. You know. This is in general.
Yeah, so it's a team approach that involves the physician, the nurse, the social worker, what we call in the United States the chaplain or the spiritual care provider, and a psychologist, and all of that to help the patient and the family understand the disease and where and the prognosis and where they are, etc. We are going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more about culturally and spiritually sensitive palliative care of Muslims with Dr. Omar Shamia, Dr. Muhammad Al-Shahri, and Ghassan Aboudari. Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Mark Lazenby, and I'm speaking with my guests, Dr. Muhammad Al-Shahri of the King Faisal Specialist Hospital in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, Ghassan Aboudari, a clinical nurse coordinator at the King Faisal Specialist Hospital in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and Dr. Omar Shamia of the King Hussein Cancer Center in Amman, Jordan.
There are over 13 million cancer survivors in the United States and over 100,000 here in Connecticut. Completing treatment is an exciting milestone, but cancer and its treatment can be a life-changing experience. Following treatment, cancer survivors can face several long-term side effects of cancer, including heart problems, osteoporosis, fertility issues, and an increased risk of second cancers. Resources for cancer survivors are available at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers to help keep cancer survivors focused on healthy living. The Survivorship Clinic at Yale Cancer Center focuses on providing guidance and direction to empower survivors to maximize their health, quality of life, and longevity. This has been a Medical Minute brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center and Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.
So, Ghassan, we're talking about the role of family. It seems like communication is very important between the palliative care team and the patient and family. What are some of the basic principles of good communication that patients and families might need to know of? So if I were talking about my own loved one, what would you want me to know about how to communicate with my team?
I think it's mentioned in all the books, you know, about the effective communication. So you have to prepare yourself and the family. There's special steps to proceed, you know, before you communicate with the family. And how to break the bad news, there's special techniques, you know, you have to follow to provide them, because most of the issues at end of life, it's really not happy news for the family. So you have to provide it in a context that they will accept it, and they feel they have to work on it, you know, like one of their goals, you know, for the family. So there's a certain techniques you have, and it's started by the physician, of course. The physician need also help from the other multidisciplinary team, you know, in processing and communicating with the family. And it's an effort of a team. It's not just only physician, they have to communicate. And we are, as nurses, we do face challenges also, because sometimes because we spend most of the time with the patients. So sometimes we get asked by the patients and their families questions, you know, maybe we are limited or constrained about the nature of the information or the extent of information to provide for them. But I think we need to be the same page as a medical team, like all the healthcare provider, to be on the same page. And it should be done through effective interdisciplinary team effort. So I think the whole team should be on the same page when they are trying to communicate with the patients. We should set our goals as a medical team about the nature and the extent of information. So we shouldn't have contradict each other. This is one of general rules. For Muslims, I believe communication maybe can involve the religion more and more emphasis on the meaning of if it was bad news related to terminal illness, it should be more focused about death and dying, the principles of death and dying for Muslims, the concept of pain, how they should be perceiving pain according to Islamic religion, because we have specific meaning for pain, for death and dying, you know, the issue of believing in predestination for Muslims. Anything it's happening on time. It's, you know, like the time of death, it's already determined by God. So these issues should be also included in the way we communicate with the family. It's a huge topic, but as I mentioned, we need a multidisciplinary team to be together, you know, and to provide the best information for the family and the right communication.
Yeah. Yeah. Dr. Omar, from the King Hussein Cancer Center, there is this notion that Ghassan just spoke about of God has predetermined the time of our deaths, and God knows it, and it's written ahead of time. Does that cause Muslim patients to be distressed about knowing when is death going to happen, or does it bring comfort, or what does that principle do in the course of their care?
Okay. In order for me to answer the question, I'll just shed light about the first importance of palliative care in our cancer population. As we know, and Muhammad and Ghassan mentioned, it's very, very important to have the principles of palliative care early on the disease, early from the disease for the patients and families. And the more preparation the team does with the patient and family, the more and the better the outcome. The notion of predestination is a fact for Muslims and non-Muslims, that the predestination and the death phenomena is a known and it's going to happen for every person on this universe. Muslims believe that God has this predestination set, so nobody can alter or bring it forward or backward about the time of death. So, however, at the same time, we have to deal with those patients as human beings, and we have to relieve the suffering what they have throughout their illness. And having said so, when there is a very, very important role for the spiritual advisor in the healthcare team, that part of the interdisciplinary team is to have a spiritual advisor. And the role of that spiritual advisor is really to strengthen the belief and faith of those Muslim patients, especially towards end of life. Because when we strengthen these beliefs and faith, we can bring the Muslim patients to a more peaceful environment. They have this, what we call, inner peace. The more they have belief in God, the more they have belief in the forgiveness, the more they have belief in the mercy of God, the more that they will not be afraid of the death. Because God created a human being to worship him, and then they created death and life, they created disease and remedy, and God created all kinds of remedies along with the disease. And the patients, they, in addition to that, they have to believe and they have to have patience and they have to bear amount of suffering, they are also encouraged to seek treatment, seek symptom management, take opioids for pain management. At the same time, we have to avoid doing harmful things or harmful interventions. So we have to have a balance between giving the effective medication and trying to take away the not effective or not beneficial interventions, especially at this difficult time of their life.
Yeah. Dr. Mohammed of the King Faisal Specialist Hospital in Riyadh, we know that palliative care doesn't just stop when a loved one dies. It includes bereavement care after death. What might that look like for a typical Muslim family in Saudi Arabia?
Right. As you know, there is a strong family support for the Muslim patient in general, and also strong community support and encouragement of the community to participate in this process. I mean, the process of caring for the person who died and caring for the family who lost one of their members. So the community will be participating in the funeral rites from the beginning, and they will attend the washing and shrouding and funeral prayer that is done by a lot of people from the Muslim community, and then they will proceed with taking the dead body to the graveyard to also participate in that activity. So all this participation and the community support to the family is actually healthy and will, in most of the times, prevent abnormal grieving. But sometimes, of course, some patients or some families are under some risk, more risk than others. And this is the duty of the healthcare providers to try as early as possible to identify who of the of their family members is at risk of developing abnormal grief and work on that ahead of time in collaboration with the community members.
Thank you. Ghassan of the King Faisal Specialist Hospital in Saudi Arabia, what are some of the practical religious rituals that your patients might partake in their hospital rooms?
At the end of life
care? At the end of life, sure.
Actually, it's a big topic, you know, and there's many cultural and spiritual, or I would say religious practices, but I think at the end of life, those needs of religious and spiritual practices become substantial for the Muslim patients. So the Muslims, they do pray 5 times per day, but you will see there's more pray, you'll see patients, they are turning TV and they're trying to listen to Quran channels, like in Saudi Arabia. Maybe in the United States, it's a different story. Maybe you can have a tape recorder or play CD with Quran. So this is something they have to do. It's listening to Quran. More pray you will see from the patients and even the family. They will start reading Quran more. One of the issues is, you know, it's not an issue. It's in the rituals, like Muslims, they have, before any prayer, they have to do purification, which is the wet ablution. They have to do a special wash. And I've been talking to many non-Muslim nurses before, as I mentioned in the study we conduct, you know. The nurse, the patient, they insist to do this wudu. And in the religion, there is a waiver for a few things. There's a modification, like they can do something called tayammum, which is a dry ablution, which is using sand for the purification. Family, they try to, if the patient lose consciousness or in the terminal illnesses, you know, for Muslims, they have a direction for pray. They have to be towards Mecca. So most of the family, they will turn the beds to face, so the patient can face Mecca for the direction of prayer. This is one of the things mentioned and most practiced among Muslims. So it's about the prayer, about reading Quran, and about the direction for prayer. Of course, other things, you know, many things, but this is the main issues, you know. We can mention, like, conclusion and then conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dr. Omar of the King Hussein Cancer Center in Jordan, you've seen palliative care provided in the United States and in Jordan. What are some of the similarities that you've seen, and what are some of the major differences that you think you've seen?
In a very short answer, palliative care can be applied in U.S., I mean, the similar way to the way that we apply palliative care in Jordan or in Saudi Arabia. It's the principles are the same. Muslim patients can have a full palliative care services in whether they are in U.S. or outside the U.S. Some of the principles that opioids are allowed. I mean, Muslims can use opioids for pain and symptom management, with holding some of the interventions which are harmful at end of life. It can be applied in the similar way in the U.S., like do not resuscitate orders for terminally ill dying patient. It's allowed in Jordan or Saudi Arabia. In addition, with holding or withdrawing some of the interventions which are unuseful, like, you know, unnecessary antibiotics or investigations which are not really useful. On the other side, that interdisciplinary team fashion, it's a similar way. We have a team in Saudi Arabia or Jordan who can provide excellent interdisciplinary care for our patients. The only thing which is practiced in some part of the U.S., some states allow euthanasia, which is not, it's forbidden for the Islamic rule. Euthanasia is forbidden for Muslims, whether they are in Saudi Arabia or Jordan or even in the U.S. Otherwise, we're discussing with people here and practicing in both part of the world. We think that there are many, many similarities of practice between the U.S. palliative care services and the non-U.S. outside the U.S. and in the Arab countries like in Saudi Arabia or Jordan or any other Arab country. Of course, there are many cultural differences, which is present even in the U.S., which plays an important thing, which is having to ask patients and families about many preferences regarding to decision making, regarding to food preferences, regarding to place of care, whether it's in the hospital or at home, regarding their who caregiving experience, the importance of family. I don't want to emphasize already. Ghassan talked about, it's very, very important point. They play a major role in supporting the patients in the disease trajectory, a social support and practical support and caregiving towards end of life, and they can be a very strong source of spiritual support for the patient as well.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of Yale Cancer Center Answers. We invite you to share your questions and comments. You can send them to canceranswers@yale.edu, or you can leave a voicemail message at 888-234-4YCC. And as an additional resource, archived programs are available in both audio and written form at yalecancercenter.org. We'd like to thank the Yale Cancer Center for providing production support for this program, and we'd also like to thank Renee Gaudet, Emily Fenton, and the staff of the Yale Broadcast and Media Center. I'm Bruce Barber, hoping you'll join us again next Sunday evening at 6 for another edition of Yale Cancer Center Answers here on WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.